one of the principles of recovery is that there are multiple pathways to recovery. And so recovery, it does go back to the definition we mentioned at the beginning, which is that it is so much more broad, that it involves health and wellness, it involves self-direction, and that that person is making a choice.
Hi, this is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, and you are listening to Into the Fold. The Hogg Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Recovery to Practice was launched by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, or SAMHSA, in 2014. Abbreviated RTP, it infuses recovery principles into the day-to-day practices of the six behavioral health professions: social work, psychology, psychiatry, addiction treatment, peer services, and psychiatric nursing. In 2015, the Hogg Foundation launched its own RTP grant program with the goal of disseminating the recovery curricula throughout Texas. The program is now in its next to last year, and it is helping us realize a key goal: to ensure that recovery is not just an ideal to aspire to, but a professional standard that informs how we work. Six organizations have received RTP funds, totaling just over $1.7 million. One of the grantees is the University of North Texas Department of Disability and Addiction Rehabilitation. They are using RTP to train addiction counselors using a train-the-trainer model, as well as promote a website that provides resources and support. The project coordinator, Carrie Breedlove, is joining us remotely from Denton, Texas. Carrie, thanks for joining us.
Well, Ike, thank you so much for having us on, and we are so appreciative of the Hogg Foundation and funding this initiative, and we are certainly very grateful to be a part of it.
And we're glad that that you're kind of on the front lines doing the work. So my first question is, we like to say that the RTP grants are mainstreaming recovery-oriented principles throughout the healthcare system. First off, how do you define recovery-oriented? Because it's a term that we like to use a lot around here. And what does it mean in the context of addiction treatment?
Well, you're absolutely right about recovery-oriented and just the term recovery being used all over the place. And I think we have to really start there with the term recovery and how we define that. And here with RTP, we do define it as per SAMHSA's definition, which is it is a process of change through which individuals improve their health and wellness, they live a self-directed life, and they strive to reach their full potential. And as far as what it means in the context of addiction treatment, you know, we would say it's really no different than in the context of a mental health treatment or in any of the other disciplines that you mentioned, because we all are subscribing to this particular definition. I think what really stands out to us when it comes to recovery-oriented care and that definition is what is not a part of the definition as much as what is there. So you're not hearing terms like abstinence, you're not hearing terms like a particular substance, drugs, alcohol. What we are hearing is that it is about individuals in general who are improving their health and wellness. And that certainly broadens the scope of who is able to be touched by a recovery-oriented type program.
Okay. And so about your grant project in particular, what were its main goals and what milestones have been achieved so far?
Well, in our first year of the grant, our program delivered training to addiction professionals, and we used that train-the-trainer model that you mentioned. And the professionals were identified as RTP champions, and we had them each make a commitment to provide two additional trainings in their respective communities during that next year. And then in that following year, the champions that we had trained in year one did deliver their RTP training to a total of 640 addiction and other behavioral health professionals in their community. strategies. And so then moving into year three, we actually created a 9-module curriculum that covered the principles of recovery with Texas in mind. So we took the principles of recovery from SAMHSA, which NADAC, the national organization that is for addiction professionals, had created, and we sort of built off of that some modules that included history and what is recovery, the recovery-oriented systems of care, peers and trauma and culture and diversity, just a bunch of different dimensions that were important for those addiction professionals to learn about. And then in year three, which we just wrapped up, we created a virtual community. And I would say this is sort of our highlight of what we've done so far. We create a virtual community of practice using a Facebook group called Recovery to Practice that literally grew itself from an inaugural 20 members to over 700 members currently from across the state. And that was in less than a year. So we've had all kinds of engagement and activity there inside the group, over 60 live videos that we've done inside of that group with a variety of professionals. And it's been a really wonderful thing to see people from across the state come together around these particular principles. And of course, we do have a virtual resource library that we created using a Google Drive that is up for the community to contribute to and take from. And then in this final year, we're planning to continue to facilitate the growth and the sustainability of our virtual community, and also to foster new connections with community colleges and universities across the state so that we can provide a full free 16-week semester course of Recovery to Practice curriculum for those colleges who are using substance use and mental health related courses.
Okay. And so you mentioned the train the trainer approach. So what are the advantages of working with an established organization like the Texas Association of Addiction Professionals?
Right. And in fact, that was another thing that we did in this past year is we did partner with TAP, and we say TAP as an abbreviation. Yeah. And we really worked with them to put on their own local area recovery to practice training. It was a full day training free to their communities. And we felt like that was really important because TAP is the state affiliate of NADAC, which we mentioned before, and they really do promote the advancement of addiction professionals. They really kind of unite under one voice for really critical matters to that profession. And so we felt like they would be on the front lines of chemical dependency related issues and concerns in Texas, you know, through the legislative initiatives that they participate in, and as well as networking opportunities and just continuing education. So because they were on the front lines, we really saw that as a great opportunity to connect with them so that they could continue to roll out that curriculum to their local communities across the state.
Right. And so, you know, one thing that I have noticed is that recovery is a constant buzzword in addiction treatment. And just because, you know, the broader rehab industry is such a grab bag of different approaches, you know, some of them rigorous and some not, some of them evidence-based and some not. How much overlap is there between the RTP curriculum and what people conventionally mean by recovery in the industry?
Yeah, and I think what you said there at the end is really the key point is what do people conventionally mean by recovery? And so typically people will think of recovery, at least, you know, from back in the day, as meaning perhaps abstinence, perhaps someone who has been through some sort of treatment facility and now they are free of drugs and alcohol and those sort of things. And so I would say there is a small overlap with that, in that that could be someone's pathway to recovery. But one of the principles of recovery is that there are multiple pathways to recovery. And yeah. So recovery, it does go back to the definition we mentioned at the beginning, which is that it is so much more broad, that it involves health and wellness. It involves self-direction, and that person is making a choice. And so I think that there is that small overlap in terms of maybe an older mentality of recovery in terms of treatment, but now we're really looking more as recovery as being a lifestyle change. And that really can include anyone, not just someone who is working through their own recovery from substance misuse.
Okay. And so in your opinion, you know, not that RTP is a brand necessarily, but I mean, what should it mean to a consumer that an addiction counselor is RTP certified or an RTP champion or what have you.
Right. And I think it's important that we do talk about the RTP certified, because there is actually a certification through NADAC, uh-huh. and that is still up and running, and people can be certified with RTP through NADAC. Through just the RTP program and the curriculum that we're using, it's not a specific certification, but when we shift over into talking about being RTP trained or an RTP champion, what that means to someone would be, if that person is your counselor and they're saying, hey, I've been RTP trained, that means that they have knowledge of trauma, they have knowledge of trauma-informed care, culture and diversity, and that being something that should be paid attention to in the course of your recovery. They know that peers and families are really important to recovery, and they really hold to the fact that respect and hope are also another tenet of recovery. And so you should know that you would be respected, collaborated with, that they're not going to be giving you their prescribed treatment of what they think your recovery needs to look like. It's really going to be a collaboration process with you.
So whenever I talk to people who are addicted, which I do occasionally, one common theme is that, you know, a monolithic approach, like let's just say the 12 steps, that's become a bit of a favored punching bag lately, and that's not my intention in bringing it up, but that unless it takes hold completely and immediately, it becomes clearer and clearer over time that that approach just isn't for them. And what I see or sense among addicted people is just a real yearning for a wider range of options. And maybe, you know, the fact that, you know, that more addiction counselors, you know, are not trained in the RTP approach is only part of the problem. However, I just think that there is still a huge gap between what people are, you know, most easily able to find by doing an online search and the best of what we actually know about what is most likely to work. And I'm sure that you can kind of bear witness to some of that from your perspective.
Sure. Yeah. And 12-step has been the predominant, I would say, maybe pathway to recovery for many years. But, you know, of course, RTP is really based around there being multiple pathways of recovery. And all of the other different pathways that are presented in the RTP curriculum, there may not be as many of them, but I will say that we are seeing many of them grow. So, for example, SMART recovery, refuge recovery, there are certainly many faith-based related recoveries, some that are 12-step related, some that are not. And there's one actually called moderation management. So there's so many different styles, and that's why RTP is so important for addiction professionals and peer providers to be educated and aware of these different pathways. Because if someone is coming to you and one particular pathway that you happen to be familiar with is not as you mentioned, a great fit for them, it's crucial that you're able to have knowledge of and give those choices and options to someone, so that way they do have the best chance for recovery.
Okay. And so my last question is what are some of the, you know, the structural or kind of systemic barriers to implementing, you know, RTP more widely?
Well, I think what initially pops into your mind is like time, attitude, and money.
Yeah. You
know, how are we going to fund these things? And, you know, one of our faculty actually here, Paula Heller Garland, I would be remiss if I did not mention her on some level, because she has been instrumental in creating the curriculum that we are currently using and disseminating across the state. But she said that, you know, without future funding, RTP is not going to have someone kind of behind the scenes manning it on a daily basis, kind of facilitating things and pushing out that positive momentum that we really hope will, you know, we do hope it will continue organically. And honestly, the structural piece that we're hoping to continue to have in place is that virtual community, because as long as people are talking and collaborating and asking questions and sharing research, the initiative will continue organically. If that ends, then it just kind of ends. And so we certainly don't want to see that happen. I think also just when it comes to time, this is why we're partnering with TAP, so that they are providing these trainings free of charge to professionals in their community so that they can come in and receive that training, and hopefully that monetary barrier will not be there for them. And we're going to also be encouraging those TAP chapters to consider continuing a RTP-related training just moving forward, maybe on an annual basis, so that way there will be some sustainability there. And then I also think just attitude sometimes can get in our way. You know, are we really going to take the time to think and reflect on these principles, you know,
right,
forward in our practice? And the reason that we will is if our peers, whether it be a peer provider, a trained peer provider, or your professional peer, is saying something to you about it. Hey, I have this community that I'm a part of. I'm really getting a lot of value there. You should be in it too. And then that sort of draws the next person in, and it just becomes this paying it forward sort of approach, where RTP becomes that buzzword where we all know what it is. Whereas some of the things that we have seen in the assessments we've done, the data we've collected, anywhere from 60% upwards of mid 80% of people that came to those RTP trainings had never heard of RTP before. Now, they were familiar with the concepts once they were presented, but they had not heard of RTP. So we really want it to be a buzzword because Then people are like, okay, what does that mean? And that draws you into the deeper conversation, which gets you in touch with some of those really core principles. And even myself, being a part of the community, I have shifted some of the ways that I speak about things, some of the ways I may write something, to be more respectful in my language, to be more person first, just based off of the conversations that I've had there. So I know that's kind of a long way around to answer it, but I think that the structural and the challenges to it being implemented more widely do come through with a solution in that virtual community, as well as the curriculum being adopted into other programs, other universities and colleges across the state, which is what we're in the process of now, is having a strategic plan of how we're going to reach them. So that way the next generation of counselors coming through school are going to be hearing about that in the classroom.
Okay. So, we are talking about RTP. If you would like to learn more about the other RTP grantees, and remember that UNT is just one of six, there's information on our website, hogg.utexas.edu. Just do a search for RTP, and a number of blog posts that we've written about it will appear. Carrie Breedlove, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and for cluing us into the great work that you are doing and spotlighting this one particular facet of RTP and how it is making a difference for people. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having us on.